Anyway, hello, Riggs. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm one of my friends who I've not seen since before the lockdown, reconnecting with the past, came round and he got a ticket on his car.
What's his name?
It's called Jordan.
It's called Jordan.
He's called Jordan, I said.
Oh, he's called Jordan. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Was it Jordan? Was it Jordan the supermodel? The glamour model, Jordan.
Yeah, she lives like in Hove, doesn't she? She came over.
She does.
I've not seen her since before the lockdown and like 33 years before that as well. It's mad.
Didn't she like break both her legs recently?
She seemed fine. She if she did, then she's made a really swift recovery.
No, I've been watching, I follow her on Instagram and there's loads of videos of her like in one of those like, you know, those American scooter things. She's wearing, and she's got two pink...
You mean like a mobility scooter?
Yeah, a mobility scooter. She's got two pink leg casts on, like both her legs.
Well, I hope that she, like, I mean this in the best way possible. I do hope she has broken her legs because otherwise she's just sort of...
Stolen valor.
Going for some sort of valor. I was going to say disability benefits.
That is stolen valor.
If you want to say valor, I guess it's brave.
Yeah, what about Lieutenant Dan?
Lieutenant Dan, what about Lieutenant Dan, yeah.
Good input, Riggs. That was a great input. Anyway, welcome to Who Is She, the podcast where we watch Big Brother for series one. Who is she?
Who is she?
Who is she?
Cool, we've never done it that way around before.
I know, I thought I'd spice things up. I thought I would take the lead. But how are you? How was your meeting with your friend? What did you do?
It was okay. Well, I guess I must be an all right. I was thinking about this after he'd gone, right? Just sitting thinking about this, right? I imagine I must be an all right person to hang out with because he wasn't that bothered that it cost him like a parking ticket to come and visit me.
Oh, that's nice. How much is the parking ticket? 50 quid?
No, so it's 70.
Whoa.
But if you pay it within 14 days, it's 35. You get a 50% discount for paying it in 2 weeks.
I remember once being with my dad and we went to East Lane Market and he parked his car around the corner. And when we came back, he had been clamped and he was furious. I've never seen a man as furious as that day. Like, he was like the worst thing that had ever happened in his life. And he was going mad and he was going, I've parked here for 20 years. He was going, and then he noticed that there was a sign and they'd just put up the sign and it was very small and he was raging. He was like, this is shifty. This is a tiny sign. And he like phoned them up and he was like ranting to them on his like early mobile phone, you know. And they had to just lump it. They had to just pay it and they came and took it off. I just remember that being an exciting.
So literally you can't. They just clamp your car and you get out. I've never had a car. So they clamp your car and you just can't do anything until you've paid whatever money they want.
Yeah, you pay the fine and they come and take off the clamp. Unless you're like some renegade who like cuts it off yourself. There are people that do that. I've seen like YouTube videos of people who are like anti-clampers or whatever.
Yeah, I remember watching like the illegal clamping Anne Robinson watchdog special.
What was that then? What, like people, like renegade clampers?
Yeah, yeah, renegade clampers. So say you park outside someone's delivery entrance and that's not a euphemism.
I'm a renegade clamper.
Beg what's good. But like if people ever park in front of your delivery entrance, people usually just clamp you up.
That's great. I'd love to have a clamp on standby that I could just use for that. Or do you know what? There's that thing that you can do.
I want to have a clamp. I like to have a clamp for people's mouths.
Oh, that's, you know, David Blaine. You know, I watched a video the other day of David Blaine sewing up his own mouth. He's so extra, and he just goes too far, David Blaine.
Yeah, but I think it's a sign of, I think it's a cry for help.
Undoubtedly.
I'm going to encase myself in ice for 13 years. Do you know, like, and where are his friends? Like, where's his support network? Where's, like, why haven't they had an intervention for Blaine?
He doesn't have friends. He talks too slowly to have friends. Like, it doesn't he talk slow? He's like, I'm David Blaine. All the time. I was like, I saw that he was on the Joe Rogan podcast recently. I was thinking, bloody hell, it's going to be a 6-hour one, that one. David Blaine talking so slowly.
You're like listening to it and you've realised you've got it on like fucking 2/3 speed or something like that.
You have to listen to it double speed just to make it audible. Have you seen his latest stunt that he did? He did it for YouTube, which is a step down. I mean, he used to be on like primetime TV and now he's on like YouTube Red or whatever. It was him he just basically is him going up in the air with loads of balloons.
Like the film Up?
Like Up, yeah, like Up.
Wow, I didn't see that. How high did he go?
Apparently he went quite high. He went fairly high up, like in the clouds and that. Like he went like sort of near the, you know, the high point where you're not supposed to go. He went up there.
Man, I reckon the Jackass team should have got David Blaine in, shouldn't they?
Yeah, but it would have just been like, he wouldn't have really been down with all the pranks and so. He wouldn't have been down with all the hair shaving and like pube based gags and stuff. Like, I don't like, imagine like hi, I'm David Blaine and today I'm gonna be sticking a toy car up my ass
and then living in it for like 6 months with no
I'm
food.
Gonna be living up my I'm David Blaine and for 2 months I'm gonna be living in my own ass with no food or water.
That's what it is. Always no food and no water, isn't it, for David Blaine? He just thinks all magic is like starving yourself.
Wait,
it's not good magic if you're eating.
His favorite. Ever, like they ask him who his favorite ever magician was, and he says it's the IRA when they're on their hunger strike. They're just so good at magic. He's so confused.
I want to be like the opposite David Blaine, where I'm like, I'm gonna go in a box, right, and I'm not gonna stop eating for like 7 months.
I'm gonna fill out this box. Yeah. I will become the box.
Do you know, like when they grow watermelons in boxes so that they can be.
Yeah.
It's gonna be like that, but a man.
You're gonna become a square watermelon. Do you know, like, I remember the whole David Blaine thing. I found it so funny, like, because, you know, when he's in America and that, everyone like proper respects him. It's like, wow, David Blaine is like, he's like standing on a plinth and like, whoa, like David Blaine, he's like, he's in this electric dome or whatever. But then he comes to Britain and he's just like, he's in a perspex box and everyone like threw ham at him or whatever.
Yeah,
everyone,
like, egged the box.
I remember that. Do you know what? Those are simpler times, weren't they? I remember when, like, the worst thing in the news was that, and it was like, yeah, this is great. This is, like, this is peak. I mean, it's about the same era, isn't it? It's like Big Brother and stuff. It was around that sort of time.
That is the British punishment from, like, any sort of, like, medieval film, like, about Robin Hood or King Arthur or something. The go-to punishment that the evil, like, Sheriff of Nottingham does is put people in a box. Over, do you know what I mean? Hangs them out in a cage or whatever, and then people just launch tomatoes. There must have been some fucking surplus of tomatoes in the medieval times.
It's cyclical, isn't it? We're just like living, like we're just repeating history, aren't we? It's pretty cool. You know, David Blaine, though, I've never, don't get me wrong, like he is a good magician and that, but like I've never really respected him as a magician, because like he, you know, like in his old program, the famous one where he's like on the streets of New York and he's like going around street magic, whatever it's called. I think like at that, the beginning of that one, it's not like other magic specials. It doesn't say like, oh, no stooges or no like actors were used, because like he blatantly is using that. Like there are certain things in it that are just impossible, like they're not even like in the realms of magic, do you know what I mean? Like, you know when he throws them playing cards at a window and then it's on the other side and they're like, whoa, it's like obvious that there's some like someone else helping with that. Like such a, like, oh, it's not magic. It's just, I'm just ranting about that.
I guess it's like you get it when you're a chef, like you get like people who are like chefing, so like the real magicians who are like in the clubs working every night doing their shuffling, do you know what I mean? Just like, you know, just hoarding rabbits in their like one bedroom flat and that, just like raring to go, always doing like new magician material and shit. And then you got these TV magicians like fucking Dynamo and fucking David Blaine.
Dynamo's the worst. I got no time for Dynamo, I'm sorry.
But that's how chefs feel whenever they see like Jamie Oliver or like Gordon Ramsay or people like that. They're like, oh, do you know what I mean? Like, no, Jamie Oliver more than the other ones actually, because because Gordon Ramsay does his own kitchens and that. But it's like, I think it's the same sort of thing. I think that TV magicians, you know, they haven't put in the hard graft, have they?
Oh, what you mean? Because they're not out there every night doing it for the love or whatever. They're like, they're too big time.
They didn't come up in the scene, I don't feel. Like, David Blaine wasn't, like, one day shuffling, like, is this your card? Or, like, I don't think he went...
No, he did. To be fair, they did come up in the scene. They did. Come on, I can't say that. Yeah, you have to be a magician.
And then one day he was just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to encase myself in some ice.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is, like, too far. That's ridiculous. I'd say if you're going to slag off a magician for that sort of thing, you want to be aiming your sights at, like, David Copperfield or Siegfried and Roy, those type of people. The Vegas sort of acts.
One of them, Siegfried, got mauled by a tiger, right?
He didn't just get mauled by a tiger. He basically got his head, like, bitten off by a tiger.
But he lived, though.
I mean, yeah, but it's not much of a life.
But his head wasn't just, like, hanging down, though, was it?
I'm not joking. Like, from what I've read, apparently it pretty much got bitten off. Like, it's a miracle that he lived.
How was he alive?
Because
what was his...
they, like... stopped the bleeding and like stuck his head back on.
What, stitched it up?
It bit his neck out. Like it really fucked him up. And he's dead now.
Oh, like it's like maybe like his jugular.
Yeah, he's dead now though.
Hey, that's only recently though, isn't it?
Yeah, but he wasn't like, you know, no offense to his family or anything. He wasn't living. You have to say that when you're laughing at the death of a magician. He wasn't living the best life, I don't think. It really, the tiger really munched him. But the thing is, right, like, I find it so difficult to have sympathy for, like, people who mess with animals. Do you know what I mean? But Dynamo, right, Dynamo is, like, one of the worst, because Dynamo, I've never seen a magician that has so little charisma as Dynamo. Like, he...
But do you think that David Blaine's charismatic, though?
No, but they're similar. But the thing about David Blaine is he has a bit of mystique. And, like, he honestly, like, you know, back in the day, everyone was like, oh, my God, like, is he, like, what is he? Is he Jesus? Like, that sort of thing, right?
Or has he been lobotomized?
Yeah, but he had, you know, he was, like, drawing, like, creepy eyes on his hands. And he was, like, freaking out Eamon Holmes and stuff. Do you remember that? And,
oh, yeah. Because that eyes on the hands thing, that's what they did in, was it Bo Selecta or whatever?
Yeah. Why are we always talking about Bo Selecta?
We love Bo Selecta.
I think it's because, like, whenever we watch Big Brother, we just transport ourselves back into the early 2000s. And we're just, like, we're on a big, like, early 2000s kick at the moment, aren't we? Watching, like, 9/11 documentaries and stuff.
It was a better time.
Oh, it was a better time. We had 9/11, you know, we had the death of Diana. It was a better time.
I've just been listening to the Alkaline Trio, and that's not even a joke. Yeah.
How many of them were there?
They were like, do you know, they were like their little chocolate bars.
A trio.
Yeah, trios. It was just a bunch of those.
Mm-hmm. But very, like, acidic.
Made out of soap. Not acidic. Alkaline.
Oh, not acidic. Whatever. I don't know. I don't know science.
This episode had it all.
It didn't let up, did it? It was exciting throughout.
It had all of the good elements that you want from just your whole life, really. It had people arguing. It had people falling in love in the diary room. It had drama. It had written drama.
Yeah, like if someone was going to ask me, you know, give me an example from series one of an episode that encompasses everything you want out of Big Brother, probably this one, right? Like, it was really, really exciting. And I think they knew it as well when they edited it, because the beginning of it was, like, really exciting. It was, like, moaning, murder and misery. I love that. It's so good.
So to give you a little bit of context, if you haven't seen the episode, it was like they had to write a play for their challenge. And initially they were going to do Gypsies in Transylvania.
I can't even imagine, like, in the early 2000s what that would have been. I think they were obviously thinking about, like... your traditional
Romanian gypsy,
like, you know, like, don't go, I don't know how they speak, but like, don't go up there, like, there's a Dracula up there kind of thing, like that sort of thing.
You mean like horse and carts, that sort of thing?
Yes. I don't think they were thinking like My Big Fat Gypsy Wedding sort of gypsies, like Irish gypsies. But in Transylvania, like
honey, what's she called? Honey, Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo Boo's not a gypsy. Honey Boo Boo's an American beauty pageant girl.
Oh, right. I don't know who she was. You just asked.
It's because they both wear very big, like, fluffy dresses. That's why you're getting mixed up.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. But, like, or maybe, like, the people from Snatch, but just at Dracula's house.
Yeah, like Brad Pitt in Snatch.
Do you like Dracula's? That sort of thing.
Hey, a lot of people say that's, like, like, people say now that's a bad performance or whatever, but I remember back in the day, everyone was going on about how good of a performance that was. You know, like, wow, Brad Pitt's really, like, he's got these guys down sort of thing.
People were quoting that film for years.
I know. And everyone was saying, like, oh, my God, like, could you imagine, like, if you fed someone to pigs? Like, oh, my God.
Do you know what it is, though? It's not. It wasn't as good as Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So I don't, for the whole time, I couldn't work out what everyone was even going on about.
Well, do you know what? I'm not a big fan of either of those films. Not really my thing, you know. I get why people like it. It's like, oh, it's kind of like a kind of Tarantino-esque British, like, all right, mate, sort of film. But I get it. Like, it's not bad. I could watch it, but it's just... And I do think Brad Pitt is enjoyable in it to watch. But it's... It's not, I wouldn't choose it. Also, I've seen it quite a lot. I like that guy in it who calls everybody a cunt. You know, the that cock, that guy, he always plays like a stereotypical East End villain. Okay, he's like a side guy, but he's the one who plays, I can't remember, oh god, I can't remember. He's got goggle eyes. He's the main one who feeds people to pigs. He was also in the Armando Iannucci shows playing a similar character. I don't know, but I remember there's like a sketch in it where he like knocks on this woman's like patio doors and she lets him in, and he's like, he sees that she's bought all the newspapers for the day, and he's like, I'm gonna sit here and you're gonna read all of those newspapers. It's a really weird, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, his accent is so good. That's one thing that I prefer the British films to, like, the sort of American sort of gangster films like The Godfather and that. I just, even though there's some great accents in The Godfather, to be fair, but like the Brit, you got just Jason Statham just being like, oh, because what makes me laugh about Statham is that I always think when you see these hard people in films, like people are always like hard men, is they all went to like theatre school.
Yeah, that's true.
And they've all been like, I'm a tree. I'm Jason Statham and I'm a tree.
Yeah. Like, you know, like, it's funny to think that in like another play or something, in a play that they might have done, they all kissed each other.
Yeah.
Like, they've all played like some kind of gay guy who's been like persecuted and die surveyed at the end. They've all been in Philadelphia, basically.
Is there anyone in the world more laddie than Vinnie Jones? Like, he's a footballer who went to become an actor, and now he's just like, oh, that's just the hard man Vinnie Jones, whenever they talk about him in like print and that.
Yeah, like Vinnie Jones is like, he's like the alpha version of Danny Dyer, isn't he?
I bet that's how Danny Dyer feels as well. Whenever they're on set together, he's probably just like slapped him in the face and that.
Yeah, like Danny Dyer is like the slightly undercooked egg version of him. I just sort of like,
Danny Dyer wants so hard to be Vinnie Jones, didn't he?
But they've had opposite careers, haven't they? Because like, well, kind of like weird parallel but kind of backwards careers, because like Danny Dyer went from like pretending to be a footballer to then pretending to be a hard man, and then and then being in EastEnders for 10 years.
But I will say this though, he's the hardest person in EastEnders.
No, he isn't. Are you joking?
Who is? I don't
Pat
know.
Butcher's the hardest person who's ever been in EastEnders. Or even that woman who plays Dot Cotton.
There's not a chance that Pat Butcher is still in EastEnders.
No, but I'm saying like, okay, well who? Okay, Ian Beale then.
Ian Beale's got a dark past. You never know. Like, if he was pushed to breaking point, you never know. Like, he could snap.
Ian Beale was so aggro, weren't he? Like, he just couldn't handle any kind of criticism, like, about his cafe or anything. He was such a stresshead.
The thing about being a soap actor is, imagine just spending, like, 40 years on a show where you're just an absolute job's worth. Like, just absolute, just a really, like, just no one likes him. People just, he's a character, people just, if you say Ian Beale to anyone in the street, they're like, that guy is a twat. Like, imagine that just being your like full-time life, like 40 years. But really, he's like probably like a sound like cool guy, but like he's got his like record collection. Every time you see him, you'd be like, you're Ian Beale, mate.
To be fair though, because we live in like a time where everything is like memed or whatever, actually I think he's got a little bit of like meme credit, hasn't he? He's got like a bit of underground sort of, like, it's funny to like do a joke about Ian Beale. Or it's funny to like have an ironic T-shirt with Ian Beale on it. So he does have like his own ironic sort of fame.
I think that to really further his career, instead of Noel Edmonds, they should have got Ian Beale in, and they should have called it Beale or No Beale.
Beale or No Beale, good one.
Thanks.
I like that.
Then Nick, because he is a psychopath, just was like, it's a good idea, Gypsies in Transylvania, but what about if there was murder?
Of course, but wasn't it originally like Darren who came up with the idea of the murder plot?
To be honest, Darren put his denim hat on, which I'm glad to see the denim hat making a comeback.
His thinking cap.
His thinking cap. Do you know what I mean? He's like, I'm going to be a goldfish. I'm going to put my hat on. I'm ready. And he had all the concepts down for this film. He was like, this camera could shoot from here. Like, as if they were going to bring like a whole team. And I was like, Darren, the cameras are already there. Do you know what I mean? You're on TV right now.
Yeah, I like that it started off as a play, but then they realised they were being filmed, and quite smartly they were like, no, let's make this like a film. Like, let's just do, like, it was wicked.
They really used the space.
Yeah, they definitely used the medium really well.
But then Nick just came straight in and was like, no, actually, I'm going to direct this now. Imagine that.
Classic Hollywood. This is, it's like the 1920s just played out in the Big Brother house.
And then Nick was, what was it? I didn't write his name down, but he was like Russell something.
It was like, my name's, yeah, it was supposed to be like a channel. He was playing the role of like a Channel 4 news reporter. His name was something like Russell Burns or something. He's like, I'm Russell Burns, and here's the news. He was not a good actor, actually. I mean, he remembered his lines competently, but he wasn't much feeling in his performance.
Some of the people in the house did surprise me with their acting skills. So what basically happened was they were like Kagi and Andy, because they're up for adoption.
I thought Andy was good.
Andy was good, but he also had a, as a sort of villain mask, he had made a sort of hat out of like bite-sized shredded wheat box.
Don't you get it? Don't you get the pun?
Go on.
He's a serial killer.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, I mean, I didn't actually think about that at the time, but I just assumed it's because they just didn't have anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it did look scary.
Trust Andy to not even be a serial killer who's like a normal size. Like, he's bite-sized, you know what I mean? Like, he's just so like beta. Is it beta or beta? What do you say?
I say beta, but I think you can say beta. I think it depends entirely how you speak.
Okay, well, Andy's such a beta male. He's chosen beta cereal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought some of the deaths were really good. So Andy and Kagi had to basically go around murdering everyone, and then basically they were going to try and find out who the murderer was. But there was like a M. Night Shyamalan twist, which we'll probably get to in a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But Andy basically walked up to Fleabag. He was playing a guitar in the garden and just went, that's enough of you, you singing nun. And then just beat her around the head with the acoustic guitar. And I thought it was great. Like, and then the only one...
Well, that... no, I liked the rewind bit, you know, because actually it was like a high concept. Like, again, it was like a Tarantino film. Like, you got to see the end at the beginning, right? Everyone's dead at the start. But then at a point, it goes rewind and everybody goes backwards, back to their original points. And then you get to see the deaths.
And I feel like that was Darren's initial input, which is why I don't think that Nick should have come over and just tried to take over the directing role. I feel like all the hard work and all the sort of pre-production had already been done.
Yeah, man. Darren wrote it. Darren conceived it. Darren originally wanted to direct it. And then Nick Swanson takes the credit, directs it. I mean, that's typical Nick, though. He is an absolute crafty dog, isn't he? I don't like Nick anymore.
Imagine if he just went up to Darren and took off his denim hat and then just slowly put it on his own head. Just like,
that would be too far. That would be just too much. I mean, also wearing that denim hat, like, that is a director's hat, isn't it? That's the kind of hat you'd imagine Steven Spielberg to wear. You'd expect it.
Should we not explain why we laughed at that? I think we should move on.
No.
Right, so Tom is a terrible actor. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah, he's not great.
His death was Kagi was. Oh no. So I'll do the twist. Right. So the M. Night Shyamalan twist is that they were both murderers.
Yeah.
And they were initially, it was like, who done it? And then it was just like, oh, they both did it. And so Kagi killed Tom by shoving his head in the oven. But he was just kind of going like, oh.
She Sylvia Plathed him.
My head's... Don't pop my head in the oven.
Don't put my head in the oven like a potato. I'm going to die.
I'm not a potato.
Oh.
at least wrap me in tin foil first. I'm gonna be honest with you, man. I love Tom. Tom is like just a lamenter. Like, I wrote this in my thing, right? Every time Tom talks, he reminds me of like a sea captain from a film, like, do you know, like Perfect Storm.
Yeah.
And they sort of stand at the bow of the boat and they're just like, the mists are coming in. And just like everything's like really like, oh, there'll be no fish tonight or something like that. Just like, just really like short sentences. And basically, like, they ran out of fags in the house. And Tom was like, the cigarettes are gone. Temperatures in the house are gonna flare. Do you know what I mean? Like, as if he was like predicting like a storm coming in.
He doesn't talk a lot, but when he does, it's meaningful. And what he said was, he was like, moods are gonna swing violently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's gonna be rocky seas tonight. But like, I think we haven't got a nickname for him, and I think we should call him Sea Captain Tom or Sea Cap Tom.
Sea Cap Tom. I don't like that. Let's just call him Captain Tom.
Captain Tom. Yeah, that's good. So we finally got a name for him, which is I'm happy about that.
Yes, Captain Tom. I like that. Hey, do you know what else is weird about Tom?
Is there anyone we haven't got a name for? Mel.
Yeah, we don't have a nickname for Mel, but largely I like Mel, so I don't think she needs one yet. Until she does something Melly Mel. What about just Melzy? You know, Tom, do you know what else he was doing in this episode that was kind of strange? He was shaving the inside of his nose with a Bic razor.
How did he even get in there? Did he squirt loads of shaving foam up his nose first so it like came out like a 99 flake?
I mean, don't get me wrong, I understand the concept of removing the nose hair, but using a Bic razor is a strange way to do it.
So I'm getting to the age where I'm like, I have hair in my nose that I could cut.
Oh, like with scissors.
But I haven't ever done it.
Well, I don't think you're supposed... I mean, I don't know, like... I think, obviously, it looks better when you don't have hair in your nose, but I think, like, scientists or doctors or whatever say that you're supposed to have some in there because it stops the bogeys or whatever.
That is a low level of scientist that is who's worked that out, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? That's like, we'll put him on noses, do you know what I mean? See how he does, and then like plutonium later, that sort of thing. I imagine all of the scientists involved in like the Cold War and that started off on nose hair theory, I think it's called.
But so the play was brilliant. Have you ever been in a play, Riggs?
Yeah, I was the Prince of Persia or something like that.
You weren't the Prince of Persia.
But in a nativity play.
What, in your nativity play you're bloody jumping over spike pits and like doing like climbing up a wobbly edge. Yeah, having a sword fight with a sultan, were you, and a skeleton.
Yeah, I was like 2D.
Hey, I used to have Prince of Persia on the Super Nintendo. It's one of the hardest games I've ever played in my goddamn life.
You didn't, because it was a Sega game.
No, I think it was...
Because I had it on the Game Gear, which was the Sega version of the Game Boy.
No, I think it was a multi-platform game.
No,
I think it was on other things
that.
Too. No, I had it on the Nintendo. I never had a Sega, I only had a Super Nintendo, so how was I playing it then?
I just don't believe you. I think you're just being stubborn.
Look, I had it, okay? I had the game.
But I was the Prince of Persia in a nativity play. By the way, that's not a character, is it?
No, it really isn't.
Like, so why have they given it to me?
I mean, maybe. I'm sure there was a Prince of Persia, but I don't...
It was a speaking role. I wasn't just wheeled out at the end. Like, by the way, and also... Prince of Persia, just as the curtains are coming down.
What did you bring Jesus as a gift? The sands of time.
No, but like, I was the person who sent the wise men on their way. That is a shit role, isn't it?
But you say it was a speaking role. I mean, that's not bad, is it? You got to speak.
Well, This is the first time I ever got a laugh on stage. I forgot my line and I ordered...
And the last.
And I ordered one of the servants to get me a line. That's good, isn't it?
Oh, really? What, you did that on the spot? You're just like, seven, get me a line. And people laughed. Look at you.
That's good, isn't it?
That is pretty good, you know.
Right there in the town hall. But I mean, like, that is... I don't understand why that was a role. Like, you can't... People will believe that the wise men are on their way, even if you don't have to have the whole origin story of the wise men in the nativity. I just don't think... The wise men, this is the wise man's dad, and that's just too much information. Do you know what I mean? It's like, look, they've got the gift.
Well, listen, I mean...
They're wise.
You do know that, like, there's just way too many kids in schools, so they have to assign... They have to find roles for everybody. Like, this is...
Yeah, but I would have been happy being a tree or, like, a donkey's ass or whatever.
You wouldn't. You wouldn't want that. You want, you know... And your parents wouldn't have been happy. That's the main thing, you know. Your dad didn't bloody pay £600 for that new video camera for you to be a tree. He wants to see his son in a speaking role. Never underestimate the sort of entitlement of parents, you know.
What about you? Have you ever been in a play?
I was only ever in one school production, and it was a musical that we did in my primary school based on The Pied Piper of Hamelin. I don't know if it was an original musical.
It's a problematic story to do in a school, but carry on.
I mean, it's true though. I don't know if it was an original musical. The song quality sounded. It was like Mr. G, you know, from Summer Heights High sort of thing.
She's a dirty girl with yeah. a bad habit.
But I only had one line, and I was person one, I think, or person two. I had one line.
What was it? Get off me, you Pied Piper.
Hey, you Pied Piper, stop pieing those pipes. my line. Are you ready for my line?
Go on. Who shall I be? Can I be someone?
Well, you can be person two, okay? And your line is, we can flush them out, okay? You say that after my line, okay?
Okay. How? What's my? What's? How? What mood am I in?
Or like, what's your motivation, sort of thing?
Yeah.
You're distressed. Everyone's worried about the rats. There's loads of rats everywhere. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So here's my line. What are we gonna do about the rats?
Flush them out. I went Cockney. Did you like that?
Yeah. You totally took it. You didn't, and you forgot to say we could flush them out. You just like right, you're just like you've solved it already. You know the Pied Piper though.
I don't know why, but I went full Brexit party on my character there.
Yeah, it was like Ray Winston. Ray Winston in the Pied Piper.
But like, who is this? Who's this child hanging out? To be fair, they'll probably be like, I'd rather that kid went off with a Pied Piper than stuck around with this yeah. fucking 40-year-old East London gangster.
Oi, Pied Piper, you slag. You dirty bitch.
Oi, you fucking Pied Piper.
What is a pied? What does that mean, Pied Piper? What does that mean?
It just means that you've been either made into a pie or someone's just mushed the pie straight into your face. And that
it doesn't have anything to do with pies, does it?
It does, and that's it just means he's pie-eyed. That's the thing people used to say.
You know, the Pied Piper is such a strange story, isn't it? It's such a weird...
The dude comes along and just takes the kid, lures the kids off with music and that, and then just...
Well, no, but he's punishing them because they refuse to pay him.
For what? Pieing or pipering? Piping.
There's a town, Hamelin, and they got loads of rats and that. There's rats everywhere. And I know that because of my line. I don't know if you heard my line, but what are we going to do about the rats? And then they hire this guy called the Pied Piper.
Do you get rid of the rats?
Yeah, he goes, I'll lure the rats away for you. But my price is, like £20.
So is he a Pied Piper? Or is he the Pied Piper?
Oh, no, apparently he's the man. Like, if you're in Yellow Pages, like, he's the first one. Like, he's the first Pied Piper you're going to find.
Piper P. P. Piper. That's what it says.
Yeah, he's the most highly rated Pied Piper on...
On TripAdvisor.
Not TripAdvisor. But so he says, oh, it's like 20 coins or whatever. And they go, yeah, that's fine. The town goes, yay. And then he does it. He gets rid of all the rats. He lures them out of the town. And then when he gets back and goes, right, it's time for you to pay me, they go, no, we're not paying you. Sorry, it's not happening. You, you've been scammed. And he goes, what? He goes, well,
to be honest, this town had it coming to them.
Yeah, and he goes, do you know what?
I mean, he's a Pied Piper. He's not just a guy. He's a Pied Piper.
Exactly. He's accredited. And he goes, listen. He goes, if you don't pay me, I'm pieing your kids. I'm going to I'm not going to pie them. That sounds wrong. I'm going to pie your kids. And he does it. He pies them away into the mountains. He takes them. And it never really says what he does with them. I just always assumed it was like lemmings. He just kind of like let them go off the cliff or whatever. But yeah, it's a weird story. But I guess it does have a moral, which is like, you know, pay your pipers.
Pay the piper.
And that's where the saying comes from, pay the piper. There you go.
And that is a safeguarded nightmare, that whole story, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Pay your piper so he doesn't pipe your children. But did he go to the same place as the rat? Did they take the children where the rats went?
I think so, yeah. I think he just generally lures them out of the town into the mountains or something.
It was into some caves. Why are they trusting a piper from the caves to come down and get rid of rats? Like, that's the weirdest job interview ever, isn't it? Like, imagine being like, we need a exterminator, and then this dude just turns up in, like, the green hat and whatever. Like,
yeah, he's always got a green hat.
With his pipe. And he's like, oh, isn't this that weird guy who lives in those caves? Because they were probably like, no, we're just going to get a guy. We're going to get a guy with a van. And you know what I mean? A guy with a sort of like, you know, insurance and a card and that, you know, like, you know, have a phone number. Like, he's not got a phone number. Like, and then he's...
Well, that's a good point, you know, because like, you know, you're saying that he's the Pied Piper of Hamelin. Like, if he's of Hamelin, if he's a Hamelin resident, then surely, like, someone must have known him, known what he's about, known his criminal record or whatever. Like, must have had access to the sex offenders register that he's no doubt on. I remember one of the songs from the musical. Do you want to? I've tried YouTube.
By the way, school plays, especially primary school plays, are hard enough without the. What is the teacher even thinking, making that into a musical?
I know, and also because like the story isn't that developed, like there's not a lot to the story. I mean, I've basically just outlined it there. They have to add, like. Have to like shoehorn things for songs to be about. So like the song that I remember was one called Market Day, and it was just like an establishing one, and it was about like it's market day, it's time for the market. And I tried finding this bloody song, I can't find it, so if anybody has access to Market Day, let me know. But it went like this. It went, Market Day, all the happy people come and play, or something like that. It was so bad.
And that's great. Have you got a home video of it?
Maybe, you know. I don't have to ask my dad. There's loads of songs. Like, in my primary school, right, our, like, music teacher, she wrote a song for the millennium. Like, she just wrote a song for the millennium, like, for us to sing. And it was called... And it was about Jesus. And it was called... It was called JC 2000. And it went like this. It was really soulful. It went... JC 2000. It was locked.
My stepmom is a primary school teacher, and somebody I think she used to work with. They're like a husband and wife teacher combination. Yeah. And they released like a Christmas album together.
Oh no.
And so they're like, one of them sat at a piano and then one of them stood next to her, like with a hand on the shoulder, that's like the front cover. And then they've been like Christmas jumpers. I mean, it's got like Christmas, it's got like Christian one, like, do you know, like, you know, like the first Noel and songs like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they did a couple of videos and stuff, and then that's what they sent to like parents and
that
stuff.
That is awful. That is like... so bad.
Imagine if you were a school kid and you found out of your teachers, that would be the best thing that has ever happened.
I mean, I think it's safe for primary school, but I think if you try that shit in secondary school, you're gonna get burnt.
They're the kind of teachers you hear about where they're like, she just left in the middle of term and no one can work out where she's gone. Like those teachers where they're like, you see them in a couple of years, they're like shaking and they've got grey hair and stuff.
I heard Mr. Perry had a mental break.
People used to, like, when they, at school, people used to talk about that, like, with, like, it was like a badge of honour. Like, we broke, we really broke our RE teacher. Like, yeah, she just wasn't the same person again afterwards. Like, I think she got divorced. She,
like, in my secondary school, we had a maths teacher who got a full can of Coke thrown at her head, and she left.
Do you know how many of your stories involve people getting a full can of Coke thrown at their head?
It was a big staple in my school, actually. It was kind of like, well, actually, to be honest, if I remember rightly, the one that was that went to my head was a Pepsi. Yeah, I remember the blue can, just so we're not misleading anyone here. It was a Pepsi. Can I just share one more song with you from my, like, one more original song from my school? My primary school was called Sandhurst Junior School. No relation to...
Isn't that also the name of a prison?
No, it's a military school as well. I was going to say it's no relation to that. But our sort of like theme tune that we had, it was...
You weren't all a bunch of tiny little officers and generals.
I mean, we were, but that was unrelated.
Just marching around the playground and that with like medals on and shit.
We did many war crimes. But our song, it went like this. It went, Sandhurst, Sandhurst Junior School.
It's like James Acaster's Kettering Town FC song.
Oh, it is a little bit, yeah, but no, but it was better.
Sandhurst, is that right?
Kind of. You put a little bit too much like soul into the middle of it. It's a lot more robotic. It's Sandhurst, Sandhurst Junior School. I think there was more to it, but I can't remember. I told you about that other song that we used to sing about lunchtimes, didn't I?
I don't know. Can you tell me again?
I mean, this one wasn't an original one, but it was like we sang it like almost every assembly. And it was just about lunchtime. It went like this. It went down in. Oh, I should probably preface that it was like steel band accompaniment, right? Which is a big primary school thing. So imagine like steel pans. Yeah.
Hang on. Who's got steel? But they had like a steel band come in every assembly to do the lunchtime song. And here's the like resident steel band.
No, but we had steel pans, and that was like a thing that you could learn. You could learn the steel pans if you wanted to at my school. But anyway, this song had a steel pan backing track, and it went like this. It went. Down in my tummy, I'm feeling so hungry. My mind is on nothing but lovely food. Wait, and then it goes, what's on the menu for lunchtime today? Let me imagine what it might say. It goes on to list a plethora of menu options that were not available to us. egg burger, beef burger, barbecued bean burger. A lot of burgers.
And then you get to the thing, and it's just nondescript beef mince, and you're like, this isn't what we sang about at all. I mean, what about the magical assembly with the steel band and the promise of burgers? Like, what's happened? Your like school sort of, people say school career, which is mad because, you know, no one's getting paid for that shit, are they?
Yeah.
But like,
except that one guy that you were giving pound coins to. That shopping trolley that bullied you.
That is a fucking excellent callback.
Thank you.
But like, you were either getting cancer drink just thrown at your head and people just being absolute fucking like literally criminal level bullying, and then you're just in the fucking hall just being like bean burger, bean.
Well, no, I mean, they're two different schools, aren't they? I mean,
you must have just been dreaming of just getting to do the Sandhurst song again.
Yeah, I mean, I did find a snippet of that song, that lunchtime song. Maybe you can play it on the podcast. Maybe you can edit a little bit of it in. Yeah, but I've not been able to find the entire song, but I remember. But I think that's exciting, you know, it makes it almost like it was a dream or something, or maybe it doesn't even really exist. But it totally does, because it's like ingrained into my brain. Egg burger, cheeseburger, barbecue, bean burger, guaranteed links up with French fries too. Tagliatelle with cheese that is smelly, to fill up my belly all afternoon. It was pretty exciting in this episode when Kagi confronted Craig about his injury, you know, because everyone's been dying to confront him about his, you know, his bad leg from last week.
Yeah, but they said that, but then I was sort of on Craig's side because he was like, he was like, I did hurt my knee, but he also did do his cycling. So what's she on about?
I think she's just annoyed at him being a lazy drama queen.
And why was she just saying that they all had leg injuries? She was like, Caroline had, she's Caroline, but she's like, I had a leg injury. Anna didn't complain about her leg injury. Tom didn't complain about his leg injury. It's like, where's everyone?
It was like the Four Yorkshiremen sketch, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, I don't even have any legs. My legs were blown off in a war. And I still bloody did it.
No, but they clearly like hated each other. So when they were doing their murder play, Caroline went to she had to smother Craig with a pillow, and I was like she's doing that, like, that's not, it stopped being acting.
Yeah, it felt a bit real, didn't it? It felt like this whole episode felt like therapy. I think it was kind of like, yeah, that sort of, like, you know, in Shutter Island where they make him, spoiler warning, they make him go through all this thing as therapy, all this like they like reenact like his traumatic whatever. That's what this was, right? It's like, because you were saying it's like because Andy has been voted out. Not voted out, but like he's up for adoption. And he took it really badly, didn't he? I think that's what they were talking about, like how badly he took it. Like he's experienced like trauma based on it. So they have to like put him in a nappy and make him go through reenacting out his like most dark desires.
It's funny watching Andy at the start of that thing, he had to relive him getting, because the whole play or the whatever they've done now, I guess it's like a TV show that they've made.
They shot a pilot.
They shot a pilot, yeah. And then to be honest, pitched it to Channel 4.
Yeah, they did it all in one. Like, what are they thinking? Like, while we're here, we got the cameras, we got the audience, let's do it.
Yeah, they should just be constantly, I'd be constantly doing that in the house now. I mean, that's such a great idea. Let's just make loads of these.
Yeah, just like every day, like regardless of like what Big Brother asks for, just like do a new play and just like all play different characters. That'd be so good, wouldn't it?
What would happen if everyone just like, if they were just like, let's just not do any Big Brother shit. Like they just didn't do the challenge. You were like, not doing the challenge. And we're just not going to put anyone up for eviction. Do you reckon they'd just turn it off?
That would be amazing, wouldn't it? That would be such a fun experiment to do. Like, they all just take off their microphones and just go wild. It'd be so good.
Yeah. And then just start murdering each other for real.
Mm, we don't need murder, but we...
So, at one point, right, Kagi goes, I'm glad Andy is up for eviction because it serves the bastard right. What does she mean by that?
Do you know what? I can't even remember what the big deal is. I think just he was just a little bit arrogant, wasn't he, or something?
I think it's like when, do you know when you wake up from a dream and you're still annoyed at people?
Yeah.
I think she's just doing that.
Like she had a dream about him and he slighted her in some way and now she's like pissed about it, yeah. Maybe, because I can't remember. I mean, it was interesting in this episode, Nicola started a rota system, didn't she?
I know, and like that is when you know your student house is about to get really, really annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, things are getting real.
Rotas are just the worst idea ever.
No one wants to look at a rota, do they?
No, just either don't do anything and just accept that that's the house you live in, which is normally my method.
So other than Nick sort of being a piece of shit and stealing Darren's limelight, there's something else mentioned in this that Nick did, which I have to say is like, is low even for him, which is that he apparently offered two of the Big Brother housemates a place to live in London. Like they were talking, there was a conversation about that. I think it was Mel, when Mel was talking to Big Brother or somebody about it, she was saying like that she doesn't trust Nick, and that she said that like she had heard him telling like Caroline and someone else that when they left or when Big Brother was over, like they could come and live in one of his flats or something. And then she heard him say that like actually, or he might have said to her that actually he's just lying. He's just like playing the game. Like he was basically openly admitted it. And that is some like next level deviancy.
Yeah, and that is Mel. This episode, she was just like, everyone is just playing a game. And you know, like, and because we've been watching like some conspiracy stuff recently, and like when you first find out about it, and you start to be like, oh my god, like. you know, people are capable of.
Here's that motorbike I said.
But she's like she's just found out about Alex Jones or something like that, and she's just like, her eyes have been opened a little bit, and she's just like starting to see the world for what it is, and she's like, oh my god, everyone's like lying.
Yeah, Mel's been red-pilled.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah, that's it. So she's like going up to people and being like, and like she's just I think she's gone a bit overboard, because she's literally just confronting people right now.
She really is. She's like, she's going around saying, it was an inside job. Bush did 9/11. She just can't stop herself. But no, but she's going around. She's basically like calling out. I respect her though. I think, you know, I like the fact that she speaks her mind and that she, you know, tells people what she's thinking. Like she said to Kagi, like, you know, like, I don't agree with what you did and don't come to me for support on it. You know, that's, it takes a big person to be like that.
Right, but I mean, she doesn't need to do it all at once. And this is why conspiracy theorists are quite annoying, isn't it? Because like, they don't just have one conspiracy theory that they'll be like, oh, I've had this idea, and then nothing for a couple of years. It's like all of the conspiracies all of the time, and like, and it's like, oh, can you not just pick one and just, you know, specialize in that one? Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Everything becomes a conspiracy after that, doesn't it? And then it devalues all the other ones that you might believe in.
And I think that Mel needs to be a bit more like that, otherwise it's gonna get pretty fucking annoying, isn't it, in the house?
No, it's just going to get tense. It's going to be good.
And she's constantly calling people out, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, maybe it'd be fun to watch the TV, but if I was in the house, I would be putting her up for adoption, you know what I mean?
No, it's because she's annoyed. It's because she's pissed off. Like, you know, her and Andy, they become like Bonnie and Clyde. Like, they're just because, like, she's pissed off that they voted for him because she likes him, and he's pissed off that they voted for him because he likes himself. Yeah. So together they're just kind of, I mean, they really are like starting to like pick fights with people, and I love it. Like Andrew at the end, like he was getting like well stressy, wasn't he? Like he was going at what's her name, the other one,
Nicola.
Yeah, I can never remember her name, I don't know why, but he's always going at Nicola. He was going like, he was just proper going at her, wasn't he? He was like, almost made her cry.
Well, he is like Nick's like little sort of sidekick, isn't he? A bit, in a way. And she's like, he's like sucking on Nick's teats. Do you know what I mean?
Please don't give our listeners that image. Oh my god.
He's like a baby goat or something like that. Yeah. Just suckling on Nick's power.
Hey, one thing that I noticed that Nick did in this episode that we haven't really spoken about is that he tried, like, his deviancy is getting to the point now where, all I'm going to say is I don't believe that Nick doesn't know how to cook eggs, okay?
I paused it and I wrote this down, so I have to read it. Hang on. Later, the mood changes. Nick has made eggs for the group, but some of them were not cooked.
And I wonder whose eggs those were, you know, like his biggest competition.
Yeah, like what? Is he just made, because they were in a bowl, so I just assumed it was scrambled eggs, and you can't just not cook a bit. Do you know what I mean? It's all in a big pan. So unless he's just done, like, how has he just given people like fried eggs, but he's just cracked an egg into a bowl and just gave Anna a raw egg, and she's like, Nick, this is a raw egg. And he's just like, I didn't think you would notice. I thought I'd get away with that.
He's like, this is Nick's salmonella surprise. Like, Nick, like, he is he really going to try and convince people that he thinks it takes 2 seconds to cook an egg?
He's not even been in the kitchen. He's just got it straight from the chicken coop. He's just like, I just fried it out here. It's just
in the shell, like.
In the shell.
And the other thing about this situation that I found it kind of interesting, if we're going to go in for conspiracy, but Nick undercooked the eggs, right? Yeah. And then at that exact same meal, Andrew is acting really eggy, right? What do you think about coincidences? Don't happen.
I love your intangible theories. They're so good.
Thank you.
It's like, and it rhymes, yeah. With this.
And I just want to say that, like, you know, when Andrew was fighting with Nicola, when Andrew was fighting with Nicola, Nicola said to him, you've got your dick stuck right up your anus. You've got your dick stuck right up your anus. I've never heard anyone say that before. It was really funny.
But she's not wrong. Like, she was also talking about how he's up how far up Nick's ass he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, he's just sort of, like, I don't know. I feel like by now, like, you know, maybe if someone put me up for adoption and I found out, I would be like, for like 2 minutes, or maybe like a minute, I'd be like, oh, that's a shame that someone in the house thinks I'm a dickhead or whatever. But I would get over it. I'd be like, I was told it at the start when I went in that, like, people are going to get voted out. So, like, why would I be surprised that it would be me? But he's still, as in, like, he's in a state of shock, mate. He's like, I just can't. It's like he didn't know. Even though someone has already gone from the house, it's like he didn't know the evictions were a thing. He's like, why are we doing this to each other? I just don't understand why. Can't we just get along? It's like, it's the fucking game. Like, Andy, just get over yourself.
I know. To be fair, it is the first series of Big Brother, right? So I guess there's a bit of leeway there. Like, possibly he didn't know what he was getting into. But yeah, you are right, I'd say. Like, it's a bit daft.
He kept saying it was a head fuck.
It's a head fuck.
You keep being like, so it's a fucking head fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's just come out of Ministry of Sound in, like, 1999.
I mean, he probably did. I mean, he looks like he did. Just put a bucket hat on him.
I liked, during that argument, Nicola was like, I'm just having a laugh. And then she went, I'm just having a laugh. L, A. And then she does, like, these big pauses in between her trying to spell laugh. And it's like, I knew she was going to have a problem with that, the G-H part of it. Do you know what I mean? Just like, L, A, U, G. And it was great to just watch it, because I love it when someone, do you know when you're having an argument with someone and you're just so into it that you're literally just saying things about any, there's no thought process.
I do, yeah.
And you just, and then you go down like a, you basically say something that you in no way can defend, or something that's just gone way too far, or like something that's just blatantly just not true. And then, like, if you just randomly start spelling a word which you're not entirely convinced that you even know how to spell.
I love the idea of like passively aggressively spelling out a word. like it's something that you don't really see that much anymore, but it's true. Like, I think people did used to do it more in the past, where it'd be like that, you know, where it's like, it's funny, 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 don't you know what that means? Like, that sort of thing. I'm going to the bank, B-A-N-K, heard of it? Like, it's like that sort of thing, right?
It reminds me of that that Ali G in the house film where he's like, R-E-S-T-P or whatever.
Yeah, good topical reference there. Thank you. Ali G in the house.
That's what it reminded me. All right, mate, fucking hell.
I like that bit in that film where he, like, he's, you know, where he's, like, doing his hunger strike, and he's tied himself to the railings, and there's just that one really silly bit where, like, someone puts...
Oh, but when you said the film, I thought you were talking about the film that they made in the Big Brother house. And I was like, what?
No. Talking about Ali G in the house. I like that bit where he's tied to the railings and then someone puts the nuggets in his face and he goes, chicken dippers! Like, he's... Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
He goes, chicken dippers! And he eats one. And they're not even chicken dippers. That's what's so strange about it. They're chicken nuggets. But he calls them chicken dippers. Like, they're some bird's eye thing or something, and they're not. Do you remember that Ali G book that came out that everybody sort of had? Everyone's like, all my friends' older brothers had it. Like, it's like an Ali G book.
I don't think so. What, like, you mean like when they make like annuals?
Yeah, it was like Ali G's Guide to Life or something. And it was like all about, like, you know, it was kind of funny, but it had a lot of like weird pictures in it and stuff. And like everybody had that Bart Simpson's Guide to Life book. Do you remember that?
I don't remember any of these like sort of characters with loose morals based Guide to Life books that you're talking about.
You don't remember Bart Simpson's Guide to Life? It was like a green book with Bart Simpson on the front looking like Oscar Wilde, and inside it, that's a great like Simpsons product, you know, a great like Simpsons thing.
No, I'm not like, I didn't realise until I started doing like sort of maybe like stand-up comedy how big the sort of Simpson nerd community is. It's massive. There's so many people who just absolutely fucking bone the Simpsons. And like, for me, it was just all right. Like, but like people like go hard on the Simpsons still.
It's gone too far, you know. Like, I'm not really big on all these like Simpsons memes, whatever. Like, I get it. Like, you had to be there though with the Simpsons. Do you know what I mean? Like, you had to be there.
Look, I get it. There's steamed hams. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
I get it, man. And it's like, it's what's happening at the moment with Peep Show as well.
Yeah, luckily Peep Show sort of dropped off a little bit, I think. Like, and it didn't. It's not. It's the thing is, it's not as big. Like The Simpsons is like fucking global, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you ever watched a foreign Simpsons?
A foreign Simpsons, like a ripoff. You mean?
No, not a ripoff. It's just that they have like a bit like anime. Like they have like different voice actors for the different countries.
No, I've never seen one.
So there's like a French Homer and stuff, and he's like sacre bleu.
Like, does it translate into sort of French culture?
Well, not entirely, but it's, you know, it's like people can figure stuff out, you know. It's like
instead of duff, he's just got like a Chardonnay.
Yeah, exactly. Homer and Bart and Lisa are both just drunk all the time. Oh my god, do you remember the episode where Bart goes to France? Like the foreign exchange one. Do you remember that? It's a really old one. I think it's like series 2 or something. It's one where Bart, like, he goes to France and he gets drunk. Someone gives him alcohol and he's drunk and he's lost and he's covered in mud and he's got no shoes on and he can't speak French. And it's like, oh my God, Bart's going to die. Like this is like, and everyone, like, no one's nice to him. But then he suddenly starts talking French. Like he kind of, it kicks in. Like it was there the whole time, you know, he could learn. He knew French.
I think I know which one you're talking about. He goes on an exchange, but like the people, but basically gets sold. It's like, it's sort of like child trafficking.
Yeah. Those early Simpsons episodes were dark, man. Did you write down that number?
Yeah.
Do you want me to phone it?
Yeah, phone it, but we have to, if someone answers, you have to say, I would like to evict Andy.
I'll try and put it on speakerphone as well. Did you hear that? It's not a number anymore, it disconnected. Should we try a different... Is there another number we could phone?
Well, it'd be the same. Do you want to just start prank calling people?
I just want to start phoning numbers from the past. What about 090-11-10-50-10? Do you remember that one?
R-E-V-E-R-S-E. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. R-E-V-E-R-S-E. I used to do reverse charge calls all the time, yeah. Not like that, though. Back before when I used to have a mobile phone, I used to always be in the phone box doing 100, speaking to the operator and going, can I do a reverse charge call to my dad, please? Come pick me up.
Phone boxes are so disgusting, aren't they? I'm so glad that we don't have to use them anymore.
I don't know. I do kind of miss them.
When you see the sort of skeletons of phone boxes just sitting around, like the past, you know what I mean? You know, like when you see like a faded sort of blockbuster that for some reason they haven't renovated yet.
I know. It's tragic. It's like, it really is just like, look at your past. It's really strange. But you know what? Time moves on. I understand that. But just let's get rid of the phone boxes then, because it's a bit tragic looking at them.
Do you remember when they briefly had like ones that you could like send an email from and stuff?
Yeah, I still see them every now and then. It's like,
you're like, I don't think people are going to be doing much office work out here.
No, they're really big as well. They're like much bigger and they've got like a webcam and shit. And it's like, oh, do you want to do a vlog from the town centre?
Did you ever watch that film Phone Booth? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, that film where he's in a phone booth.
the whole thing. I don't know where they got the name.
God, was that during the writer's strike or something, that one? Do you remember the writer's strike? Was it during that? It's like, well, what about if we just had a movie where there's a guy and he's in like a phone box and like there's a sniper and he's like gonna kill him.
Do you think that the name of the film and the fact it was in a phone box are related, or do you think that that's just a coincidence?
I think it's just a coincidence. I think Colin Farrell was like, I've got an idea for a film. What if it was called Phone Booth? I don't know what it's about yet, though. And they were like, "Oh, we've got this." They're like, "We've got this script." Actually, it's like it's all set in a phone booth. I bet that wasn't even a real phone booth. I bet that was just like a set or something. I bet there's no like tour to go to the phone booth from Phone Booth. No one cares about that.
Were they just trying to give people? Maybe that was from like big. Joe, like the big mobile phone companies.
Yeah, like Orange.
Yeah, maybe they sort of like commissioned Phone Booth to be made to make people really afraid of going into phone boxes. So like, Joe, like, or maybe it was like Big Landline.
Oh
like
my
that.
God, what a brilliant conspiracy. That's such a good conspiracy. I think, yeah, no, I think it's the mobile phone industry. Like they kind of like all got together and like a cabal and were like, yeah, let's make this movie to like completely.
I like the idea of Big Landline more because the mobile phones would have come along anyway, but Landline was sort of like dying.
Oh yeah, Landline is completely dead, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we briefly had one, I think it was only like a year ago, we had like a, I used to just phone it sometimes when I was in the house on my own, just to be like, it's weird, isn't it, to have it.
You know, do you want to hear something cringy? You know when I was in my Brighton flat where I lived, and because I was like living on my own for like the first time properly on my own, like without like a partner or whatever, I was like, you know, I was paying the phone bill and the internet and everything, and I noticed that like, oh, you need to have, yeah, like it was annoying because like to have internet you had to have a phone bill, like if you're with BT, and I was in a BT area, I had to have BT, and I remember thinking like, well, I'm paying for the phone line, but like I'm not using it, and it just was playing on my mind, you know, like I've got this phone line, I'm not using it. So I went to Robert Dias and I bought like one with an answer machine on it. I was like, wow, I've got a phone number. I was like, do you know what? This is going to be my stand-up phone. Like, this is like my business phone. and I was like, I'm going to put it on my website. You know, like, if you want to book me, like, you can phone me on my landline. Phone me on my phone, my business phone. No one phoned me. Like, I never received or made a call on that phone. I think I used to phone my dad on the weekends just to catch up because I was like, oh, I'll get free calls on the weekends. But yeah, what an absolute waste of time.
So thanks for listening to episode 10. 10 episodes of the Who Is You.
We're not at episode 10, are we?
It's the episode 10, mate. Double digits.
Oh my god. We need to celebrate. What are we going to do? What should we do to celebrate 10 successful episodes?
Let's do that prank call again.
I tell you what, we'll do. I think we should do something. Like, I think we do need to be involved in the voting process, don't we? I think that's fun. Like, maybe next time when it comes to the eviction, like we'll phone. Let's try and phone Channel 4. Let's try and find a contact number for Channel 4 so we can actually vote. Shall I have a look now? Shall I quickly have a look now so we can phone it? Let's look at... Let's do this. Let's get this done now because I think it would be funny for the podcast. So let's have a look. So, oh, Leaving Neverland is on it now. Should we phone about that? I vote that Michael Jackson's innocent. What's Lodgers and Codgers? No, Lodgers for Codgers. What's that? With under 30 struggling to get a home. Listen to this. With under 30 struggling to get a home, can the many over 60s with rooms to spare help? What a stupid idea for a programme. Lodgers for Codgers, you know. Listen, I found a phone number for Channel 4. It's just the customer service number. Should we just phone them and vote? Okay, so we're voting for Andy, okay?
Welcome to Channel 4 of your inquiries. If you have a touch-tone phone and have a query about the All 4 service, please press 1. For information on how to access and for details of programmes featuring audio description, please press 2.
Is that Todd?
For details of applying for information under the Freedom of Information Act, please press 3.
It does sound like Todd.
He sounds like a sea captain too.
If you have an inquiry or would like to make a comment about a Channel 4 programme, please hold the line and your call will be transferred.
Okay, we just got to hold the line.
Please note, the calls may be recorded for training and quality assurance purposes. And for details of how we process personal data, please see our privacy policy at www.channel4.com.
Bloody hell, get on with it, Channel
4. This is why phone boxes stop being used, by the way, because of things like this.
Can you hear that okay?
Thank you for calling Channel 4 of your inquiries. Our lines are now closed.
What's going on?
Our opening hours are 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday, and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. You can leave a message after the tone.
Okay, I'm going to leave a message.
Alternatively, you can email us on our contact form at www.channel4.com/contact.
Yes, hello. I'm just phoning because I would like to cast my vote for Big Brother, please. I am voting for Andy to leave the house because Invisible Andy, because he's not a very nice man. He at first was almost invisible, and now he's come out of his shell. He's actually a bit of a dick. So I would like to vote for Andy over Caroline. I like Caroline. I like her lip liner, and I think she's got a sassy kind of attitude. That's all I wanted to say. If you could please... Actually, do you know what? I would like to be phoned back. So if you could phone me back so we can talk about this, that would be better. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll phone back tomorrow so I can actually talk to a real person as well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Before he's actually... actually say anything. I've